and this notion that a bunch of billionaires could somehow anoint a person that has to be elected by 47 to 49% of a 350 million person country without the rails of a political party always seemed insane, and I suppose I'm glad they've at least admitted defeat.
Welcome to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I'm Peter Hamby.
It's Monday, April 8th, which means it's Media Monday. Today, John Kelly and I talk about the death of a no-labels presidential bid and why the Washington media's fixation on the centrist group and their threat to Joe Biden was always a little misplaced. We also talk about why Ari Emanuel decided to take Endeavor private again and how much all the players involved are getting paid. We'll discuss all that and much, much more on today's episode of The Powers That Be.
Are you tired of sleeping hotter than hell? I sure am. I sleep hot. There's something crucial about sleep that eludes us when we're too warm, too uncomfortable, and too caught in the web of our own thoughts to drift off. And while curiosity fuels our days, science tells us that cool sleep recharges our nights. That's where Chili Pad by Sleep Me comes in. Meet the bed cooling system that elevates the quality of human life through cool sleep. The Chili Pad bed cooling system is your new bedtime solution. I love it. It lets you customize your sleeping environment to your optimal temperature, ensuring you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Chili Pad works with your existing mattress. It's a water-based mattress topper that continuously controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees, allowing your body to rest and recover. This isn't just about escaping the heat, it's also about optimizing your sleep for better health, more energy, and improved physical and cognitive performance, which I obviously need hosting a podcast. Chili Pads are designed for one or two sleepers, so if your sleep partner likes to sleep at a different temperature, or you only need it for one side of the bed, that's okay too, and we know that's crucial. Plus, you can schedule automated temperature changes to trigger deep sleep. But when I'm at home, Chili Pad solves those problems. So trust me on this one. Visit sleep.me/powers to get your Chili Pad and save up to $315 with code POWERS. This offer is available exclusively for Powers That Be listeners and only for a limited time. Order it today with free shipping and try it out for 30 days. You can return it for free if you don't like it with their sleep trial. Visit www.sleep.me/powers because you're not just investing in better sleep, you're creating a better life.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to the Powers That Be. If it's Monday, it is, of course, Media Monday. I'm joined today by John Kelly. We're going to talk about the end of no labels and Washington's fixation on something that probably was never going to happen in the first place. We're also going to talk about Ari Emanuel taking Endeavor private after just 3 years of being a publicly traded company. But first, John, are you just counting down the days to the White House Correspondents' Dinner week? I mean, you must be excited. This is a big, big deal. All of the world is going to tune in to see what Washington is up to that week, of course.
Don't I look like an excited man to you? I mean, this is the opportunity of a lifetime to sit in the audience at the Riggs Hotel in, I guess, what is Metro Penn, D.C. It's sort of a fake neighborhood that's evolved in the last couple years near Chinatown, the Capital One Arena, and watch you and Matt interview Aaron Sorkin. This is the biggest get in town. You know, when Puck decides to throw a White House Correspondents' Dinner, we're not fucking around, man. You know, we want to throw the best party of the weekend, so we're going to collaborate with our pals at WME. Yes, we're represented by WME, and we're going to talk about Ari in the second segment. And, of course, Snap as well. And, you know, I have to tell you, this is something that I think we were trying to be thoughtful about this because there are a zillion parties this weekend. As you know, it's like a Southern school homecoming weekend in some way, you know, where you're out from Thursday through Sunday and everyone's eyes are bloodshot and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, our credo is let's come in, throw the best party of everyone and get out of there.
That's a great credo. Love to party. We throw good parties. Send me your questions for Aaron Sorkin, by the way, dear listeners. Would love to know what your thoughts are on that. I want to ask him who he would cast today as Josh Lyman and Toby and CJ. Although Allison Janney can still play CJ, I think. John, I want to talk about, speaking of Washington, No Labels. This is a independent group that's been around for a while, run by Nancy Jacobson and Mark Penn. Dark money group. Raised a lot of money to try to recruit a centrist third-party ticket to run against Joe Biden and Donald Trump. They went after 30 people. The Rock, Joe Manchin, Nikki Haley, Chris Christie. I mean, a really long list of folks who turned them down, who came around to the reality that there was no appetite for this, and they announced they're not going to field a ticket this year. They said they didn't see a path to victory. That, to me, seemed pretty obvious. I think to a handful of reporters out there who have covered these things in the past, candidate flirtations with running, the threat of third-party campaigns. The real threat has been out there for a year. I think I was one of the first people to write this, was the rise of RFK Jr. and him taking votes among young people and black folks in the polls, whereas No Labels was not an actual human. There were no actual ideas. But Washington, nonetheless, covered this enterprise relentlessly for a year. All the people who were opposing them, Third Way and Move On, working on behalf of the Biden campaign, took a victory lap about this the other day, saying they were just going to be spoilers. They were only going to take votes from Joe Biden. And they were right. I'm curious what you thought about this from a distance, because out here in real America of California, no one even knows what No Labels is. And yet it was a subject of like a Politico article every other day, I felt like.
Yeah, a quick tangent here. We were watching the latest Curb Your Enthusiasm episode the other night, the one that Bruce Springsteen is in that features Larry giving the boss COVID. I wondered if there was a little bit of Larry David sedition going on there. You know, the episode is based around him giving him COVID. And Cheryl Hines, a.k.a. the future first lady in the RFK Jr. administration, you know, the anti-vaxxer of all anti-vaxxers, is there delivering lines about all this. And I wondered if that was Larry David's sort of, you know, subtle apoplexy at the whole thing. But to your bigger point, I mean, this is a test tube baby, if I've ever seen one. And you deserve all the credit because you were right about this early. I count myself as among the Americans who did wonder from time to time if our fair democracy couldn't field a candidate more competitive than Donald Trump or Joe Biden. But I think what we've learned here is that business models are everything, and that's true with political systems too. There are many better candidates out there than these two. Don't at me. But that's true. Unfortunately, they're all people who are a member of either of those parties, particularly Democrats and members of the establishment who were not going to cross the aisle. So when you mentioned that the people that Nancy Jacobson and Mark Penn, two total swamp creatures, I mean, you know, people who have even less understanding of real America than I do, then the 30 or so people that they spoke to are absolutely below the level of the two candidates. And this to me just underscored the revelation of 2016, which is how profoundly out of touch, let's call it K-Street for lack of a better term, but a catch-all encompassing interests of lobbying, public affairs, advocacy, sort of swamp pulse beating, how little they understand the electorate. Because this thing was really dead on arrival, and this notion that a bunch of billionaires could somehow anoint a person that has to be elected by 47 to 49% of a 350 million person country without the rails of a political party always seemed insane. And I suppose I'm glad they've at least admitted defeat.
It's a misreading of the electorate in a way. Look, there's a thirst for bipartisanship out there notionally. But when it comes down to it and you give people ballot tests and you ask who you're going to vote for, there's actually not. People vote Republican or Democrat, and then you've got the 13% in the middle that swings, and you've got the people who are on the sidelines who decide to participate or not. But like, there's not – people want Congress to like come together and pass bills, but they want them to come together as Republicans and Democrats. An outside third-party candidate hasn't won an electoral vote since George Wallace – you know, back during the segregation days. Ross Perot did really well in the polls and was winning for a time the summer of 92, but never ended up winning a single vote. But it wasn't to me just that this runs up against what the American people want. It just defies the logic of political self-interest. And think about the people they were talking to. They wanted a Republican and a Democrat who are going to be either the top of the ticket and the running mate or vice versa. How would that work? Like, scratch below the surface here. So Nikki Haley and Kyrsten Sinema come together. Who's going to get the top of the ticket? Whose staff is going to come over and run the campaign? What is the policy agenda going to be like when one of the candidates is pro-life and one of the candidates supports abortion rights? How are you going to scale up your name ID and whatever your message is in only 5 or 6 months until the election? $70 million is what they promised to spend. I think there's going to be some $15 billion in paid advertising across up and down the ballot this cycle. That's a drop in the bucket. It just wasn't ever going to work. And then go back another step, Joe Manchin, Larry Hogan, whoever these people are, whoever these people who fetishize centrism and coming together, they all, at the end of the day, are Trump critics. And so all it took was like a phone call probably from Joe Biden to Joe Manchin saying, hey, buddy, you're a Democrat. I'll do what you
want. What are you doing?
Don't do this. I mean, these people want to still be able to get invited to the parties, to get in the green room, to get their book deal, to maintain some kind of standing within the party apparatus. And if you run for president as a third party and act as a spoiler, no one wants to invite you to the party anymore in either tent. We already have an example of this. This happened in 2020 with Howard Schultz, who ran as a centrist outsider and for a few months had no real ideas other than just some boardroom pablum, was browbeaten out of the race by people who were like, we don't want you, man. And on top of that, didn't have any political talents to speak of. And so, yes, No Labels came around rightly to the fact that they had no path, but the whole project from the very beginning just smelled dubious. And on top of that, you had rising in the background and overtaking them in the mind of the public, an actual human being with actual ideas, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He was the guy. He's the threat. And so, look, I think, again, Washington, the press, Democrats, they were right to focus on No Labels early when it was kind of this notional threat. But man, in the last 6 months, I've been like, this is just not going to be a thing at all. Why are people obsessed over something that's never going to happen? To me, it's like No Labels is like the Quibi of politics. Like, no one stepped back and asked, who is this for?
Right.
Before raising all this money and going to market.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And you're raising all the right points. You know that I'm sort of a systems person. And two things are just so glaringly obvious in retrospect here. The first is that Penn and Jacobson couldn't figure out an incentive structure, right? You were mentioning people like Kyrsten Sinema, i.e. mid-career, potentially ascendant politicians. Mm. What's an incentive structure that's going to take a Republican or a Democrat and say, hey, take a risk here, potentially nuke your entire career to run on a bipartisan ticket that's going to be a shit show where we haven't figured out any of the details other than the fact that we have money until we don't, right? Like, that's a sort of risk that there probably is a type of person in the world that would consider it, but it is not a risk that a politician takes, right? Like, politics is a generally risk-averse sport that has to do with voting on the right side, considering the right issues,
you know, having the conversation, so to speak. It's not a business where you expect like live golf tours, where you say, here's the money, do something grossly unpopular that you may regret. But like, it's the chance, the small chance that it works out is so high that you'll be able to recover. And the other piece too, is that if you've learned anything from the last 30 years of American politics, it is an organic process. If you look at the rise of candidates, like even, I mean, I hate to say this, George W. Bush, who, you know, had only been in politics for 8 years before he became president, or the unbelievable ascent of Barack Obama, the terrifying ascent of Trump. You can't create these genetically modified candidates. That's what Jeb was. You know, on some level, I hate to say it, don't at me, that's what Hillary was too. You know, and that's what this was, like, to a T. And the idea that you could just raise up a party overnight to compete in a national election, it was a, on some level, you know, fascinating or, dare I say, innovative attempt to solve a problem, which is that there is a malaise over this election, which we discuss on this program on a nearly weekly basis. There just is. There's an enthusiasm problem. But this wasn't the way to solve it, you know, or they may have had a quixotic vision for finding a centrist candidate, but you're not going to do that in one cycle. And the challenge here is it's a two-sided marketplace. They were trying to figure out the market side that dealt with the candidates and also the other side of the market, which was the donors. And to keep the donors interested and involved in this dark money scheme, they had to do it fast. And unfortunately, politics doesn't work that way.
For all the shouts of socialism from the right about Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, there is a centrist already in the White House, at least temperamentally, and he's running again for president. Might not be popular, temperamentally a centrist. His name is Joe Biden. He already exists. And you mentioned scheme. I'm sure Nancy Jacobson and Mark Penn were taking a healthy retainer out of this multi-million
They've enterprise. Done fine.
So this has been de-risked for them. It's not all benevolent here, folks.
Yeah, I know. This has been – that's the other problem, too. Incentives are everything. And if they're – I don't know what their fee structure is, but I'm sure that it's such that if this worked out, it'd be great for them. But just doing it, it's A-OK, too.
I want to take a quick break, John. When we come back, I want to ask how it's working out for Ari Emanuel after his decision to take Endeavor off the publicly traded market.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Welcome back to the Powers That Be, everybody. It is Media Monday. I'm talking to John Kelly. John, Matt Bellany filed about this late last week. He's always got the scoop on this sort of thing out here in Hollywood. Endeavor is now going back to being private after being publicly traded for only 3 years. And as somebody who doesn't totally understand the stock market and these sort of things, how on earth do you go public and then only 3 years later be like,
Let's not do this.
Well, you may recall that Endeavor, which is the holding company created by Ari Emanuel and Patrick Weitzel, I think most recognizable for listeners of this show is WME, the talent agency. These guys were both agents. I think they came out of ICM. They started the Endeavor talent agency. They eventually acquired William Morris, a historic, you know, talent agency that's... I think Jim Wide would have been the CEO for years. And that's, you know, the mailroom stories of people like, you know, Geffen and Diller who all started their career there. It's a absolutely quintessential part of Hollywood lore. And they gobbled it up. And I think people thought that they were, you know, trying to compete with CAA in the representation business. But it turned out that they had a vision that was much more significant than that, or much more variegated. They wanted to own a number of other representation and live entertainment assets, UFC, professional bull riding, which I think they bought before its time. You know, in a pre Yellowstone world and a pre live rights to streaming world. I don't think people understood that, and they bought a bunch of smaller businesses like On Location and a speaking agency, and they tried to go public. I think it was in 2017, 18, and you may recall it didn't happen. It didn't get out. And this is a process that does occasionally happen to companies. It most famously and most recently happened to WeWork, where the company wrote an S-1, hired a bank, and they could not drum up the support among institutional investors to carry the company from the private market over to the public one. They couldn't block trade the shares in a way that would create value, and so they pulled the plug. And the same thing happened with Ari and Patrick, but they tried again. And they tried again after COVID, pointing out that this was a reopening play. Our partner Bill Cohan wrote a lot at the time about what he thought was the flawed perspective in trying to get it out there, but it floated. And I think a couple years later, the stock really was either misunderstood or poorly understood or underappreciated or appreciated fairly. Anyway, it did not thrive as a public company for a lot of reasons. I think investors just thought it was complicated. Like there were, we're living in an era where people look at entertainment assets and value clarity. It's the reason why Paramount has suffered so mightily, right? It's, you know, has a market cap of $8 billion because investors don't like the mix of cable plus CBS plus the studio plus NFL rights. Legacy costs way down on really exciting businesses like, in particular, CBS and a vault of IP. And that happened with Endeavor, where there were a lot of performing assets that the market understood, but I think that they were probably deprecated by others. So anyway, Matt did a fantastic job on this, not surprisingly. And a couple of salient points here that are really interesting. One, Egon Durban, Silver Lake. Egon Durban, again, was a Twitter board member who played a role, as you may recall, in the Musk era, that sort of interregnum to Musk era. But he was the majority owner or the largest individual owner, Silver Lake was, of WME, and he's taking it private. He's paying a huge premium. It's 55% of where the stock was trading. So they're buying it for a higher share price. I think it's like $27 versus where it was when IPO, which was like $24. This is very relevant because there are a lot of partners at WME for years who deferred their bonuses because they were told they were going to make that windfall in the IPO. They did not. It was a major issue internally for some people who felt like they were snookered, especially as they saw Ari and Patrick taking nine figures off the table. Again, these were founders, so they're entitled to a certain liquidity opportunity. So those guys will get their money now. I think the big questions are going to be, Ari's vision is fully realized, and he's going to do great in this too. Is he going to... Will Patrick depart in a couple of years? He was given $250,000, basically a blank check by Egon Durban to do something else. Will this, you know, fully be the Ari show again? And I think the other big piece is, what are they going to sell? I don't think that they took this private because they believe that they've maxed out value. I think they feel like they can probably find new ways to create revenue, and they don't care what public investors or the vanguards of the world make of this. They're also 51% owners of the new UFC, WWE, TKO investment. So there are a lot of ways to extract a ton of value here, but I imagine that it'll involve deprecation, sales, layoffs, et cetera, as they make this thing more efficient.
Last thing before I let you go, John, will Ari Emanuel himself personally be okay? Will he be able to go to Mykonos this summer and hose down Elon Musk shirtless? Will he still have a nice little bank account?
Yeah, Ari's fine. Matt went through the deal. I just have to refer people to his excellent story to get a sense of the granular economics here. I should say, as Matt points out, Ari rolled $200 million into the new deal. So he's committed to this, right? And that's important. The founder has to be incentivized in the new structure. Because, hey, it's possible, too, that like once they repair the P&L here, that they may take this thing public again. I just don't know. But yes, will he have his plane? Yes. Will he be making eight figures a year? Yes. Will there be a second liquidity event for him? Yes. And and I know that there are people who may find that to be unfair, but there are others who recognize that that's part of his genius. You know, that's what separated him from other agents in his time, was that he not only understood the representation business, but he also understood financial structure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are still sore about the $165 million he took out of the company when it went public. But that's the nature. Sorry, it was right before it went public. But that's the nature of the game. He had created immense value, you know, $13 billion worth of it. And he's entitled to it. So, yeah, he's going to do just fine.
All right, John. Thanks so much, buddy. Talk to you soon.
All right. See you in the Slack.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Ben Landy. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, Bob Tabador, and Ben Landy, executive editor at Puck.